This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Eva Romero. Today I'm with Yvonne Montoya, a mother, dance maker, consultant, and founding director of Sapphos Dance Theater, based here in Tucson, Arizona. She is also the Kennedy Center Citizen Artist Fellow and the Dance USA Artist Fellow for the 2019-2020 class. Yvonne, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am really excited to talk about Latinx dance in the context of the Southwest and in the context of the nation. But can we start with hearing a little more about you and your dance journey?
So I started dancing as a child, tap ballet on and off. There wasn't any consistent training because I moved around a bit as a child. And then in high school, I was on my local dance team, which was a big deal in my hometown. I'm originally from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I don't know if the high school dance teams are still a thing, but when I was in high school, they were a thing, and I did that. And then when I came to the U of A for college, I remember signing up to take ballet as an elective. And my dad kind of telling me, you know, as we were walking around campus after I registered, yeah, you know, Hita, that was nice that you danced in high school. And, you know, that was fun. But I think you need to, you know, focus on academics now and kind of, you know, leave that in the past. And I am a first generation college student. And so he wanted me to focus on a career or a major that was going to get me a career and a job. I had a first cousin who was also a first generation college student who studied dance at UCLA, and my parents were very mindful of the fact that she went back to grad school because she couldn't get a job as a dancer. That was the narrative that was being told to me. So I said, okay, sounds good. And I ended up studying dance at the U of A. I did jazz and modern because back at that time I could. And then after I graduated, I went immediately back for grad school for academics and Mexican American studies, and I audited classes at the U of A at that time. And after grad school, I started dancing with a handful of local companies, local modern companies, and that unfortunately was not a positive experience for me. There were a lot of micro and macro aggressions. As a Latina, oftentimes I was the only Latina in the company or one of two dancers of color. In these companies, they also tended to be very cliquey, and I definitely wasn't a part of the in crowd. There was some issues with my body. I'm short, I'm curvy, I don't have the standard, you know, concert dance, thin, long body. Throughout my entire dance career, I've been made aware of that, but there was, you know, was more vocal in those moments. And I had staged some choreography that was not well received. I definitely was working at that time and still am in a different aesthetic. And so I took a break. And at the time, I birthed a child in the middle of all of this. And 9 months after I birthed a child, I started my own dance company, you know, Sapphos Dance Theater, which is, we co-founded that with Michelle Orduña in 2009. And that's been quite a journey. So
you mentioned to me that you walked away from dance like 4 times.
Yes.
But you had to come back.
Yeah, I love dance, but dance doesn't necessarily love me back. And there have been times in my life where I'm like, I'm done. I'm going to get another job where I can make more money in a field that might be more embracing and accepting of me, who I am. And I always come back. I remember in grad school being told, you know, yeah, you're auditing these dance classes and you're dancing for these companies on the side, but eventually you'll have to stop and pick and, you know, do academia. But I feel like the mixing of like the academic background with the dance has really been beneficial for me. And I can't escape it. I guess it's meant to be if I keep coming back to it.
So with the creation of Sapphos, do you feel that other people who had the kind of experience that you've had came to the company?
No, actually, I think that It's hard even today, because Sophos is now 10 years old, finding Latinx dancers and dancers of color that are working in the aesthetics in which I'm working. There's not a whole lot of them in Tucson or even in Arizona. Those that make it to a certain level, because there's just not the resources or infrastructure to support them, will leave to the coast. And so there was a point in time, the last big show season that Sophos did, where we brought in dancers from California, because there just wasn't a depth. There's not a, there's no like a pool of artists from which I can draw, or like a bench. We started out to create this and create, I think the original mission was a safe space for Latinx artists to tell stories, specifically focusing on the borderlands. And that didn't come to fruition in the way in which I had envisioned, just because of the scarcity. We are a desert in many ways. So, yeah. And Sophos, and I should clarify that Sophos operates a little bit differently now than it did when it first started. We were the traditional dance company with an artistic season. We did a lot of site adaptive, site specific work. We were in residency at the House of Neighborly Service in the city of South Tucson for 3 years. But in 2015, after that location was sold and there was some new ownership, and then I also went through some personal stuff, I lost my father, the company took a step back to reevaluate our work and how we can serve the community, and in which community we're serving, because we also recognized that we had kind of hit our glass ceiling for in terms of resources. And I was working so hard and so many hours to try to get resources, and it wasn't enough. And I just don't think that it could have been enough. I couldn't give to the artists and community in the capacity in which all of us deserved, and we were all overworked and way underpaid. After losing my father, there was a time of reflection of the hours that I'll never get back that I spent apart from my son in trying to grow and develop this company. And in terms of being a mom in dance, in concert dance in particular, and having a very small company in this region, those are the invisible things I don't think a lot of people see, those sacrifices that go unnoticed, especially by colleagues that don't have children or don't understand those sacrifices. And that's time away from my son that I'm never going to get back. So after we restructured, and we did so to collaborate more with larger organizations that serve either Arizona or Latinx, and we've been, in my opinion, I think very successful with that. But then I also embarked upon a solo project called Motherhood in the Performing Arts. And my son and I did a dance film together that aired in Hungary. And we worked on that for a while. And then I was invited to do other things in Arizona and different parts of the state. So, yeah.
Could you tell us about Dance in the Desert and why you organized it?
Yes. So Dance in the Desert came out of a mentorship that I had with Dance USA in 2016. I started kind of going out of this region and seeing the infrastructure that other communities have set up to serve their dancers. And I'm specifically talking about, postmodern contemporary concert dance. Like, I want to be very specific about that. And I said, nothing like this exists in the Southwest, either for just dancers that are here, but also for Latinx dancers. And we are a large population in the Southwest. And it just doesn't make sense that nationally nothing exists for Latinx dance. Like, I know that there's the IABD, the International Association for Blacks in Dance, and they have an annual conference. And they have advocacy on the Hill for the NEA and funding for the arts. And I said, nothing like that exists for Latinx people. So I kind of shopped the idea around to different funders. But I was just Yvonne in Tucson with a crazy idea. And then in 2017, I was a post-grad fellow at ASU in their Projecting All Voices program. And I was shopping around up in the Phoenix area, and I had lunch with a colleague of mine, Gabriela Munoz, at the Arizona Commission for the Arts, and she was running the AZ Art Worker program there, and she really liked the idea and gave the initial seed money to get Dance in the Desert started. So with that investment, we went to our initial partners, Liz Lerman LLC, and then the Dean's Creativity Council at ASU, and they gave us the seed money to do the first pilot of Dance in the Desert, which brought together Latinx funders, dance makers, arts administrators, presenters from all over the country to Arizona. There was predominantly Arizona artists, just to have plática, to have conversation. Who are we? What are our strengths? What do we need? What can we do moving forward? We conducted focus groups. I have a research background, and I geeked out and worked with some colleagues of mine in the Decolonial Epistemologies Dance Lab that I'm a part of, which is, we meet virtually. It's this international collection of Latin American and Latinx dance makers that, and researcher scholars, where we wear all these hats and we come together. It used to be once a month, but now it's probably once every 2 months to have these conversations. And one of the members is a researcher, and she came down and conducted focus groups with the intention to eventually collect enough focus groups in different Latinx dance communities to create this evaluation tool that can be used nationwide. We were very ambitious. And then after the first iteration, the two main partners stayed on board, and we had our second iteration of Dance in the Desert, May of this year, here in Tucson on the U of A campus. And this was specifically all Arizona-based Latinx artists. So the goal was to incubate new artwork by Arizona-based choreographers. And that was a very conscious decision on my end to support the choreographers because they're the engine driving source of employment for dancers. So we had choreographers from the Phoenix metro area, from Douglas, Arizona, and from Tucson come together and had three very intense days of incubating new work, workshops with Liz Lerman. We flew in Ana Maria Alvarez from LA, who runs Contratiempo Dance, to talk about Latinx aesthetics. It was very successful. We had some really great work come out of that. And it really began to see momentum coming with the community building and the relationship building that's coming about as a result of Dance in the Desert.
There are some pretty interesting hierarchies in dance, some that we've talked about a little bit in previous conversation. And it reminded me of something that grant makers in the arts are really stressing these days, which it's uncontested, it's very well documented that there has been a historical, societal, and philanthropic bias for European art forms, just in general, which actually makes perfect sense if you consider the structures of our society. So therefore, we have a European, non-European hierarchy, we have an East Coast, West Coast hierarchy, we have an indoor, outdoor dancing hierarchy, narrative, non-narrative, long bodies, short bodies. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
How much time do we have? It's a loaded question. No.
Well, I find the coast hierarchy is really interesting.
Yeah. When I am at these national gatherings, the Southwest is definitely invisible. And in my opinion, I see larger organizations and institutions kind of patting themselves on the back when there's West Coast representation, but that happens to literally be the West Coast and kind of nothing outside of California's large coastal cities. So in my experience in the larger national dance field, the Southwest is very much invisibilized. Our stories, the artists, they don't even know we exist. And then in terms of the aesthetics, I think that I'm very interested and curious, and my own personal research question at the moment is, what are the Latinx dance aesthetics of the Southwest region? Because, like I mentioned earlier, I'm from northern New Mexico, and I've lived in Tucson for, it'll be 21 years next month, so it's been a long time. And I'm aware of the different aesthetics that are here, the different, you know, music styles. There's definitely, from being from northern New Mexico, there's a Santa Fe style, right? It's super highly commercialized now, but it exists. Tucson's known, right? We are the What's the designation?
City of Gastronomy, UNESCO designation. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we're known for that. So what is the movement aesthetic equivalent of that for the Latinx population? So I'm very interested in that. And I tend to create work outside of a theater. I find theaters extremely limiting. I do that to intentionally embrace the Rosquache aesthetic, but also out of necessity, because sometimes I don't have the money to afford working in a theater with the lights and the blah and the sound design and all the other stuff that is needed for that type of work. So is that a Southwest aesthetic, knowing that historically Latinx dance, at least in northern New Mexico where I'm from, has occurred outside or in dance halls and not in these theater settings. So what does that mean? And then how do I move in my body that looks different, that's shorter, that's curvier, that's different than, you know, Martha Graham style or ballet? You know, what if I hadn't learned those forms, how would my body move? So I'm beginning to the process of undoing and questioning what that is. And you know, we have beautiful sunsets here. I mean, the colors, the sky, things are different. So how does that influence what we're doing so that my work doesn't look like a sad ripoff of some of the work in the coast? Like, that's my goal. Like, what are the sounds and the shapes? And then how is that then articulated to funders that this is what we, my community of practice or the communities in which I work, this is what we consider a quote unquote high aesthetic. And I'm saying the quotes, the air quotes, because that's reinforcing a hierarchy of aesthetic, right, that I don't believe should exist. But because my work might not be in a theater when I turn it in for a grant application for a national funder, that points against me. They want to see work in a theater. They want to see certain body types. They want to see long bodies. And I tend to cast different types of bodies. So I have no answers. We began to have a small conversation about that at Dance in the Desert. And one of the things that came out of that is the need to hold space for the multiplicities of Latinidad within the conversation. Because within Dance in the Desert, we have a lot of different experiences of Latinidad. Given the region and the history and where we are geographically, the majority of the dancers in Dance in the Desert are Mexican-American. But within that, there's diversity because there's dancers that are undocumented or documented or third or fourth, fifth generation Mexican-American. Or, you know, so within that, there's diversity of experience and aesthetic. And being from northern New Mexico, I definitely have a different experience with time and with the way time is constructed, and that became like a very interesting topic for us to talk about with other Latinx practitioners that may have different experiences with that. So figuring out how as a community we can come together and hold place for that multiplicity, because all those things are real and true, and then as a collective be able to articulate this is how we see this multiplicities as a valid, again, because I think a lot of times the aesthetics in which I work are not validated by these larger institutions in dance as valid aesthetics that need to be supported and funded. And then speaking to like the East-West, sometimes our institutions within Arizona give copious amounts of money to outsiders from the coast to come in, which is great. We do need that infusion of new works coming in. But sometimes I also think if just a fraction of that was given to the local artists so that we're supporting the work of those that are already here doing it to create them so that they can create and generate work, we could do this. We could create this robust, amazing work. We just need a little bit of that funding and trust to be able to do that. And I think that the pieces that were incubated at Dance in the Desert 2019 were phenomenal, and they just needed a little bit of cleaning and could have been staged as an evening-length show with the five choreographers. And we went into that telling the choreographers, there's no right or wrong. This is not a commission. You can create whatever you want to create. Because a lot of times, if a lot of times if I'm commissioned to do work, they're looking for a certain style or aesthetic. And so I feel like I don't have the chance or the opportunity to take the artistic risk, to explore, to push the boundaries, to grow. And so I wanted to be very intentional in Dance in the Desert and let choreographers know that they were there to experiment, to explore. And the work that came out of that was phenomenal. And all it took was a little bit of investment in those dancers in that community.
To your point about funders, it was very interesting in this webinar that I was privy to from Grantmakers in the Arts. They actually had a chart that had, when people judging grants say, I'm concerned about the quality of the work, what do you mean by that? If you're concerned about the quality, are you really talking about the quality, or are you saying that because it's a non-European, you know, influenced form, or it has a non-European aesthetic, or, you know, these key kind of terms that would come up in people's objections or concerns, that really, when you dig a little bit deeper, it turns out that they're actually just referencing the pro-Western European history in terms of arts funding preferences. So I think we're in a really exciting moment where a lot of arts funders are realizing that they need to investigate this, or are starting to be asked to investigate this.
Yes, because you're absolutely right.
And it's tough, right? I mean, I think everybody has been quite conditioned by what they know, and you don't necessarily know what you don't know until maybe somebody asks you to think about it and investigate it.
Yes, and there have been those dance institutions, Latinx dance institutions, that do embrace that aesthetic. Ballet Hispanico historically has, to a large extent, embraced that aesthetic. And that's fine. We should be able to have that and the work that's going to come out of the Southwest by the experience, the lived experiences of the artists that live and work here.
You have already said quite a bit about the challenges for dancers and choreographers in Tucson. But I was wondering if you could just expand on it a little more. I know, talking to you and to others, it seems like when dancers get to a certain level in Tucson, they don't have peers here anymore. All their relationships end up being remote with people in other places, which has a very isolating effect.
Yes, geographic isolation in the West is very, very real. I don't have any peers that I identify with here. Tucson is not that far from Phoenix, but that 2-hour drive one way and then 2 hours back is a big toll. I remember when I started the MPA project, so this was about 2016, making a conscious effort to say, who are my peers in Phoenix and how can I connect with them? But it takes time to build relationships, and I'll make a generalization, but Latinx relationship building in general is done a lot face-to-face. You get to know people in person and not, you know, via the email or exchanges. So it does create a challenge. Most of my dancers, because I exclusively work with all Latinx dancers now at this point in my career, the majority of my dancers are based in Phoenix. So I will be the one that usually drives up for rehearsal. And then the cost of travel, the cost of me being there, rehearsal space is more expensive in the Phoenix metro area. Those are challenges, but the geographic isolation is something that Dance in the Desert seeks to overcome. I had no idea there was a robust dance community in Douglas, Arizona. That's a 2-hour and 15-minute drive from my house. And so intentionally traveling to build those relationships and build bridges is really important. There tends to be this out of sight, out of mind that I really feel, because now most of my peers and are based in Phoenix, and it's very apparent to me that, oh, they haven't, because I'm not there on a daily basis, they haven't seen or thought of me. And I think that also happens on this larger national scale as well. We're very invisibilized if it's not San Francisco or New York or maybe even LA. It is challenging not having a community of practice or having to travel to Phoenix to rehearse there and then get the very large video of the rehearsal footage and send it to a dramaturg in Michigan or Albuquerque or, you know, wherever they may be, to work across time and space like that is very challenging. But But at least we have the technology to connect like that so that there is this community that we are building collectively. But coming together in person, I think those are really the radical acts, because that's when we're able to foster the innovation, push the field forward, share ideas. And I wish that there was more resources so that we being Dance in the Desert, could support that more often. And I should clarify that Sophos is one of the collaborating partners on Dance in the Desert. So one of the organizations that bring it into fruition and have been a part of it for the past 2 years. So,
Yvonne, could you tell us about Stories from Home?
Yes, Stories from Home is a evening length piece that I'm working on right now that is the physical embodiment of the oral traditions of northern New Mexico, where my family's from and has lived for many, 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 many generations. But there will also be stories from Tucson in the piece as well, because I've lived here for 21 years. And so I'm definitely representing the Southwest and the Southwest aesthetic. In 2017, I was in residency at Space on Rider Farm in Brewster, New York with my son. I was doing the parent residency, and I had proposed to go and work on a piece, a solo, Deslinguadas, that is another piece from Story from Home, and it's an excerpt from it. But I got there, and I'm thousands of miles away from the Southwest. I feel super disconnected. I'm in this barn. I don't feel any connection to the land. Nothing's calling me. I can't create. I'm totally stumped. I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I went for a walk. And as I'm walking through the fields, it's a very large farm. They have flowers. There's, you know, all types of animals. There's food. I mean, it's just really big. I hear in the distance Spanish being spoken. And I said, that's the connection. My dad, who was from Santa Fe, New Mexico, was a bracero at the end of the bracero program in the 1960s. And he picked watermelon and cantaloupe in the fields of Yuma and other places in California, Southern California, from the age of 11 to 14. And that's just mind-boggling to me, because it's summer, it's like 103 right now, and he would pick in that weather at the age of 11. My son's 11. I can't even imagine. And I always knew that I wanted to create a piece about him, his time as a bracero. My dad passed in 2015, and I collected an oral history that had an excerpt of him talking about his experience as a bracero. So I said, that's what ties me to the land. And so I went in and I created the skeleton of the piece, Braceros, that I later set on dancers during my fellowship at ASU. And the interesting thing is, I never saw the people or met the people who were speaking Spanish in the field. They were very invisible. So I don't know from what country in Latin America they were from or what their stories were, which I thought was a real missed opportunity. I worked with an amazing composer, Samuel Peña, who is up in the Phoenix area. And my dad's voice is the first thing that is heard at the beginning of the piece, which... it's hard for me every once in a while to go in and hear his voice over the speakers when he's been gone for a while. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.